Agents of Smooch. I am Annette Weirstra, Director of Smooch, and I am joined today by two agents. Hello, Agent Kathy Campbell.
Hello, Agent Annette. I am here and ready. I have my L&P soda, my Vegemite Sammy, and my Hokey Pokey ice cream.
That all sounds good except for the Vegemite.
You know, I got it just in case. It's a thing you'd have to do when you travel to New Zealand, so I'm ready.
And we also have Agent Quinn Rose with us. Hello, Quinn.
Hello. I'm excited to be here, and I'm just wondering where Kathy goes grocery shopping.
The super fancy Down Under imaginary grocery store where you can get things because, it's a podcast and I don't actually have them.
We can get Marmite here quite easily in Edmonton, but I haven't seen Vegemite. We're a Marmite household. I am not the person who eats that.
Ooh.
My British husband does. Yeah. Anyways, we are not here to talk about Vegemite or Marmite, unless we are. We are here to talk about our virtual vacation 2020. We are starting a brand new series about vacation spots that we're going to go across the world just for the summer, because this is the summer of pandemic and nobody is allowed to travel anywhere except for maybe slightly around their house, backyard. Maybe their neighborhood. And it's very sad. So we wanted to do a virtual vacation. And we're going to take you weekly for a little while, just for the summer. We're going to drop weekly podcasts, all of them in different exotic locations and traveling. And our first stop, we're starting on the other side of the world, as you might have suspected by now, in New Zealand. And we are going to talk about the movie on Netflix called Falling In, with two N's, Falling In Love. That is a movie that came out last summer, and it is, I think, kind of a delightful rom-com movie.
With the exception of The Christmas Prince, it's one of the first ones, the first Netflix originals that took a romance movie, but then they also made some changes to open up diversity at least a little bit, which got people talking and allowed for communications on just how white Hallmark Channel is.
Yeah, I really appreciated how this movie, even though it still like has a primarily white cast, I think it's done an admirable job of filling out the cast of characters, avoiding the totally like white, straight, small town aesthetic that every single Hallmark movie seems to take place in.
Yes.
They have a variety of characters, and of course our lead actress, Christina Milian, is Afro-Latina, and she is also, I have to say, stunningly gorgeous, as well as the lead actor.
Not gorgeous.
The point of this conversation, but God, they're beautiful.
So pretty.
But as well as, like, there's lots of different kinds of people that are kind of milling about the town, as well as I think this movie does a good job of leaning away from the typical cliches of this kind of thing of like, city career girl falls in love with a small town, learns to connect with it. But instead of being like going back to her hometown to like go mudding and learn how to make candles or something, she still is pursuing a really interesting career and is just finding fulfillment along the way in a way that she didn't expect, but she's not leaving behind her dreams to do so.
Right. She adapts her dreams almost into this world that she's looking at, which is great because she has these huge dreams of eco-friendly. Gray water is a huge thing, which most people would have no idea what that means. And I feel like they really talked about it in a very basic way, but in a way that can help people start thinking about things. But I love that, she has this passion. It's very solid. And she isn't going to
give up her whole self, which is like, that's a Hallmark theme, is like, let's give ourselves up.
Right.
For
like,
men.
Oh, I can no longer be a city lawyer because I must come home and take care of my dead mom's library or whatever. So she's able to take this passion and do it wherever she wants to do. And so even when she wins this in and she moves only for a short period of time to New Zealand, which she makes a comment of making sure that throughout, you know, the first three quarters of the movie, I'm here for a short period of time and then I'm going to flip this beautiful to be building. Like, she still has this knowledge and awareness of what she wants to do and the changes she wants to make in the world. And she doesn't ever question that. That's solid.
I like the concept of her real life implying there's something that is real and then not real, which I feel is a very vacation-y sort of thing, because when you go away someplace new, it is kind of really outside. It feels idyllic. It feels not your real life, you know? And I think that's the process of her falling in love with a place and a community as much as it is a person. And become like, it takes her a while to become her real life in a way that felt authentic, as you were saying.
And like you said, she's falling in love with the place. So it's not just she's staying for the cute guy she met on summer vacation. She's falling in love with the entire town, with the cafe, with the plant store, with all of these people that make up the community, and not just, oh, here's my one best friend that I've made. Like, she is here for the whole group and that space, which makes it feel more real, because you wouldn't necessarily, I mean, some people will and they'll feel extremely fulfilled to like pick up everything and move for one person. But most of the time it's difficult to have that be successful, because if that one person is now no longer in your life, how are you going to move back? Are you going to stay there? But like being able to really like fall in love with everything that is involved, including the difficulties and the goat that pops up everywhere.
Yes, Gilbert.
Yes, I think that was really a realness to this, which is something that Netflix is starting to really like concentrate on with their originals, which is great.
And what a place to fall in love with.
Oh my
goodness,
so gorgeous. It almost makes me wish I hiked.
I would go hiking here, yes, for sure.
I have to say, I grew up in rural Maine, and now I live in Chicago, and now I can't leave. And so it's getting to the point where I just, like, every time I see trees, it does make, it's like, it does, it's starting to have, like, a physiological reaction in my body. But even outside of those circumstances, I still would be, like, blown away by the gorgeousness of this movie. And they do this whole thing where they're like showcasing different settings all around the town to show you. They're like, here's the woods and here's the beach, and everything is so idyllic. And look at these beautiful supermodels walking through it. Wouldn't you love to frolic with them? And I would.
They're all so pretty.
Yes. And I love that they also kind of poke fun at Australia at several points throughout the movie.
Mm.
They definitely have this kind of attitude that like, they're acting like all of Australia is the big city and all of New Zealand is the small town, which is kind of a funny dynamic. But it's also like there's a couple parts where she's like worried about dangerous animals or something like that. And he goes, we don't have those here. Like, we don't have snakes in New Zealand or stuff like that, where it's like, no, no, no. That's Australia's. They're the weird ones. We're all chill and happy.
I really relate to that, because in Canada, we are very particular at not being mistaken as American, because people will often group us in
extremely valid way.
Yes. Yeah. And so so I was like, yeah, I totally get what's happening. It's like, we're not Australian, we're New Zealand. And we do a lot of that. Not that we don't love our American friends, but we're not American.
Right.
We're Canadian. So it's very important, that distinction. Probably Americans don't even wouldn't notice or care, but because you are a much larger country next to a smaller country, at least in population, that we often feel like we have to stake out our little territory. So I really related. I'm like, yeah, it's exactly the same thing that's happening there. I was hoping, and I feel like for me, it was being fulfilled by watching a movie about a beautiful other place. It was making me feel a little bit like at least my brain was having a short vacation. Did you feel that as well, that you got a little break at least from the sameness of being in your house all the time?
So this movie does such an incredible job, just like Quinn said, about showcasing the scenery. You can tell that they shot it in New Zealand, or at least, you know, pick up scenes and bits and pieces of it. And this is so cliche to say, but it feels like the country was a character in the movie too. You have these beautiful epic landscapes and all of the beautiful lush greenery and the water of all kinds, and it took time to breathe and feel those scenes, as opposed to just, oh, hey, look, we've got, you know, a film down New York City on a big street, and now everything else is taking place in a soundstage.
It was filmed mostly in a small town not far from Auckland in the North Island. So it's definitely, that's New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I think it makes a difference.
It really does, because they use it in such a way. They use the scenery in such a way that it doesn't ever feel like, ugh, another beautiful, epic sunset on the mountains. it's very purposeful. And I think they did a wonderful job with that.
I agree with all of that, as well as the overall concept of being on a vacation during this movie, is there's so little conflict in this entire movie. There's just enough conflict to kind of gently push forward a plot. And the rest of it is just, you know, nice views and people getting to know each other. And it is quite relaxing.
Yeah, it's I want to say thin on plot, but not necessarily in a bad way. It's just it's gentle. I think it just eases you through a story. There's some conflict that feels really authentic and real, because those are the sorts of conflicts you would actually have, and none of the not manufactured conflict. Right. And then, the biggest drama is probably they have a fire at the end where everyone kind of goes in and has a heroic moment. And then we move on to a nice resolution.
Since we've brought it up, this fire, and I don't know what the fire codes for volunteer firemen in New Zealand are, but where the heck were their respirators? I'm sorry. There is no way that should be allowed. I'm sorry, but no.
There's a real laissez-faire fire department over here. They're just kind of rolling
I had a lot of problems. Back to the conflict conversation. I really like how they ended the bit with the boyfriend when Dean comes and she's...
Oh, yes.
Like, the next morning, he's like, I slept really good. And she's like, hey, you need to check out. We're done. I don't want to be with you anymore. Like, all of this. It would have been so easy for him to explode and like throw things or start to like punch her and then Jake come up and protect her or anything like that. And instead he's like, hey, cool, thanks, bye. It doesn't feel like he's holding this rage to explode in the future. It feels like a real reaction.
Everyone in this movie, for the most part, is very emotionally mature. Like, the big fight between our main couple it comes from a genuine conflict, and neither of them are completely in the wrong or completely in the right, and they, like, work it out in a mature way that feels natural. There is some conniving, but for the most part, like, for our kind of antagonist in the movie, but for the most part, even her, like, concerns and her actions are very reasonable given the circumstances. Yes. There is, like, one big moment where our antagonist sends out this text message that's a bit of a contrived conflict. But really, besides that, like, everything unfolds in a very natural way.
That also made me so angry. Like, who from a big city doesn't have a lock on their phone?
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, I get it. It is a movie. We will give some glaze over specific things, and this is one of them. But, yeah, I had thoughts.
I don't think that Dean, the ex-boyfriend, would have come to New Zealand otherwise. I think he would have just accepted that they were broken up, even from a distance. So I think you needed something contrived to get him there.
So even though you had this whatever event happen with the antagonist come with the name of Charlotte, which is such a antagonist name in this type of scenario. I don't know why. Again, I had a visceral reaction. Even then, he comes not to steal her or get her back or anything, but because he realized what she did and has done and brought a buyer.
Yeah.
He didn't just show up and said, hey, baby, I'm here. Let's go. He did the research and found somebody that purchases property to do a conglomerate of Airbnbs and brought her there to spend a lot of money to buy this thing that she worked so hard on that she was looking to sell. And that's huge. Instead of just like, okay, now granted, he did, you're rolling in the money, now we can be together, but not really. Like, it was interesting choices that were made by everyone involved, and it makes me happy that this exists.
Did anyone wonder how much the money was? Because I'm like, you're selling one property, like, how much rolling in the money could you act like?
Right. Well, see, I think though, so all of the work is done, so the building is complete and super fancy with you know, the high speed internet and a change so that there's no TVs in the room, which was a big thing. And you have all of this gray water usage as well as it's fully solar powered. And the company was looking to get into New Zealand property. When something right. like this presents, yeah, you're going to spend whatever amount of money because you know you're going to roll in the dough.
I'm sure it was a lot of money. And I of course, they wouldn't tell us the number just so we can imagine and just like understand. Yeah, it's a lot of money. But wouldn't it be extremely funny if the number was actually in New Zealand dollars and they thought it was American dollars? And so it's like still a lot, but it was not much. Nearly as much as they thought it was.
I love that idea.
That would be amazing.
Headcanon.
I checked and... it is a house. It is not an inn. We cannot go there because this is the stuff I do. No, it is somebody's house that they borrowed for the production. And we cannot go and stay in an Airbnb.
Unless we come with a big check and say, hey, we would like to purchase your house.
They got a Zillow listing. How much they have for?
Does Zillow work in New Zealand? I don't know.
This is what we do with all our podcast money because we're rolling in it.
Uh-huh, clearly.
Let's talk about the romance. Did you find the progression of Gabriella and Jake's relationship good? I did find they were kind of playing on the independent woman and I don't need to be rescued. And I think one of the important lessons Gabriella was learning was the difference between independent and strength, and also knowing when to build that community and ask for help, and that help is not weakness.
Yes.
At the beginning of the movie, she's actually kind of a jerk to Jake, and he's being quite nice and not even that strong-handed on, like, in terms of trying to take over things or anything, but that's how she's interpreting it, which was kind of a funny play on that trope.
Yeah, it was a little much in terms of her trying to make her, like, sort of like the big city aggression, and I like that there was a bit of counterpart of that where she... even though she's kind of confused by it, she's also super friendly with other people in the town.
Yes.
And she like gets along really well with people in the cafe and Norm at the hardware store right away, and learns to trust them pretty quickly. I think it's that contrast with how she interacts with Jake. It is more indicative of her being like attracted to him and nervous around him and not, and wanting to like put on this really tough face for him in particular, as opposed to just overall being kind of a mean person, which is how she would come off if she was like that with everyone.
Yep.
So I feel I thought it was a little much and they probably could have dropped back from that a little faster. But I still think that the contracts of how she interacts with different people in the town, I feel, worked well to sort of paint him and spotlight why their relationship is different.
And plus the whole flip from when she is willing to accept help felt really good, too. So she gets a cold and her friends come and glom on her. Remember when we could go to friends' houses? Was that?
I know.
Oh, so great.
I miss that.
Shelley brings the doctor and the cafe owners come and they bring food and drinks, and Jake comes to fix the water, and you could tell that she's scared. She's like, I don't have money. And they all are like, dude, girl, we got you. Like, this is what friends do. Don't you have friends? And it's so heartwarming because it feels very much like if you've ever met somebody or know somebody that has had difficulty trusting people and most of the people in the past have always been keeping track of everything that somebody does, where like, oh, well, I brought you dinner here, so you need to bring me dinner next week type of a relationship. The moment that they realize that you don't want anything from them other than just to be a friend, that click is so emotional, and seeing that on her face was just it was very real.
And also another angle on that I thought of as well is that it's not that just that people are coming over to help her out, it's that they're all specifically coming and helping her with aspects of the life that are how they make their money. The doctor is checking her up, and the contractor is fixing her sink, and the people who run the cafe are bringing her food. And so I think that she has this knee-jerk reaction where she's like, well, I have to pay you for your services, why you shouldn't do this stuff for me for free, because the sort of even friendship economy that she's lived in before is like that kind of thing is expected, where like even if she does, she would consider these people like friends or friendly at this point, but she still feels like she has to pay them for the things that are their crafts. And when they say no, that's just not how things work around here and in our town. Yes, like you come to our places and you you come to our places of business and you buy things on a normal day, but like when you need help, we're just going to help you however we can. And all that we're asking from you back is to be friends with us and help us however you can when we need help. And I think that it's even beyond the sort of like foundational layer of like learning to trust people and letting in this whole community, it's even like a shift in mindset of how the exchange of this relationship even works in her life.
Yeah, and especially when she's coming from a city where you pay somebody to take you to the airport. Because I'm sure she took a Lyft to the airport. Mm-hmm. A friend didn't drive her. She doesn't know somebody that runs a taxi company. And so she would have called WebMD for a video chat if she was sick and all of these things. And so being able to have these just presented to her too, to where she didn't have to organize it.
You see that with Norm as well, who gives her a 90-day credit and is even like kind of like, yeah, you'll pay me when this pays off, right? So he's giving her, you a stranger to town, the trust of giving her a 90-day credit, but also implied that she'll just pay him back when she pays. You know, it just seems like this idyllic sort of community that probably doesn't exist in real life, but don't we want it to be real?
And I think portions of it can exist in real life. My community is pretty strong and there is a lot of that, which is why I didn't think it until you said it, Quinn. But yeah, that's totally correct. But there are still, of course, humans in this world and not everyone is like that. And that's okay too. But yeah, having the idea that this small town is actually a small town meant to watch out for each other. They're not losing out on her business because they're giving something for free. This gift is strengthening the bond between business to business, which is important in the world that we live in, I think.
And then the movie basically just becomes like home reno porn.
Yes.
Which I totally enjoyed, and going, I could run a B&B like this and have like work on this with some hot dude who looks really good without a shirt on.
I could not do it, but I would gladly watch other people put together home renovations and enjoy and support. And I would bring the iced tea. That would be my job.
I have been painting my entire house while we've been locked up, so I'm game for it. I'm not as good at building things, but I feel like I could learn.
I'm happy to decorate. That's yeah. My contribution.
There you go.
You just need to find your other reno half.
Yeah.
That can work with you, and you can do the decorating, and that person can do all of the
hard work,
you know, construction.
Yeah.
Can we take a moment to discuss the love letters?
Yes.
Yes.
So, obviously, a beautiful scene. I think I actually said, oh, come on, out loud when she revealed that on their romantic seaside picnic, she had brought the love letters they found in an old house to read out loud. And I was like, all right.
Who could you convince to read the letters out loud with you?
Oh, my God. But the thing that really gets me... and I can't let it go, is that they get to the end of the letters and the last letter is her saying that she hasn't heard from him for months and she doesn't know if he's died in World War I. Where do they think they got the letters back from,
right?
If he didn't survive?
I was thinking the same thing because I couldn't remember how it ended. I knew that something happened, but I couldn't remember if it was happy ending or not. And I was like, so they better have gotten together, because if these letters magically happen to have both sides of the story in a perfectly collated, tied with a ribbon contribution, like, no, mm-hmm. I'm walking out. And so, yes, they got together. Of course they freaking got together and they stayed. Now, why they were in the wall, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, as the sun is setting is when they decide to go into the water.
When it's getting cold.
It's getting cold. I was just like, why in your clothing? I had thoughts in that.
They're too hot to be fully clothed. Right. Not because of the outside
no,
temperature.
No, it's true.
But because of the inside temperature.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're coming at it from Northern Pacific Ocean.
Right.
I wouldn't even go in the Pacific Ocean when it's full sun.
No.
Out Vancouver wise or something. So
yeah, me neither.
We're probably biased. Maybe it's warmer ocean there.
Maybe. But still, as the sun sets, and I know. Then you're going to get sand everywhere.
You don't want to hike in wet clothes.
Yeah, because of course they hiked for however long to get to that point. And then they're going to swim in the water as the sun sets. And then they have to hike all that way back in the dark. That doesn't seem very smart.
Headlamps. Yeah. Headlamps. And there's no snakes, we already know.
Yes. Just goats.
Because they almost have no real conflict. There's like a lot of opportunity, as in so many rom-coms, to bring in conflict between them. The biggest conflict was the beginning when you have the, oh, he's so terrible and I hate him. And of course, they're going to fall in love. And they have sort of a good, I think they have a pretty good chemistry. And then the big disagreement is about whether or not she's going to stay, which feels like a good reason to have some disagreement.
Yeah. It was a legitimate conflict that was chosen. I remember when I first watched it, and then when I learned that he was a widower, it's like, okay, is this going to be a plot point, or is it going to be a reason to have conflict of, you know, they're going to start dating, and then, oh, he's going to decide he's not ready, or, I don't know, the ghost mm-hmm. of his wife comes back, because you don't know how this is going to happen. But yes. I like that it didn't become a big part of the plot, and it made it a little bit more normalized that, yes, sometimes spouses die and it's okay to continue on.
I did have a bit of a problem with that, though, because the movie used it as like an excuse that he was single, which I thought was just so weird. It's like, for a movie that we've discussed has resisted the worst of the sort of the Hallmark movie cliches up to that point, the whole idea of like, this beautiful man needs an excuse to not be right. with anyone, as opposed to just like, sometimes people are single,
right.
Was like really weird. And the fact that they only had one conversation about it where he was just like, yeah, like really loved her, obviously, but I'm, you know, moving on with my life and that's what she would want, or et cetera. It's like, just seems weird to have such like a really serious thing to happen in someone's life be such a minor plot point in this movie.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good point, too. Maybe a little bit more in the middle. Push it just a little bit. It doesn't have to be this extreme, overly dramatic moment where, you know, oh, I can no longer be with you because my wife doesn't like you or whatever. But yeah, maybe more than just a little footnote. Yeah.
I'm now imagining the Ghost Story version where she does come and say, I don't like her.
Yes.
Let's have a sequel. Wait, maybe that was the open the door to the sequel.
Oh, there
the
we go.
The Airbnb is actually the ghost of his wife. It's a supernatural romp. They have to learn how to get along.
All three of them.
They become allied to fight the evil ghost, you know.
Yes, mm-hmm. Perfect.
Spit on here.
Did anyone notice the person at the place where she was getting all like the hall, I don't know, calling it the Hall of Records. I'm sure that's not what it's called. But she said something about there being a tragedy, and then there was no tragedy ever mentioned.
Oh, I missed that.
Which almost implies, like, it makes me wonder if they had the letters situation be a tragedy and then change it. But she's like, oh, the tragedy and nothing. So that is laying a groundwork
for a
sequel.
Okay, I'm here for it.
What was the tragedy at the end?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Other than, I wonder if, like, the owner, because, so, did we ever learn who the son was?
Oh, no, they just mentioned, like, yeah.
Okay.
I thought he was going to show up, but yeah, they were just like, nope, he skipped town. No one knows where the great-grandson is or whatever his relationship.
I wonder if those were all key plot points for the movie, but then they made changes to let it breathe a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And like took some plot points away to let it feel. Yeah, I could totally see a second movie where whoever great-grandson sees that it's been fixed up and wants to come back and take it back over or something.
I'm hoping for a ghost story.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Why not both?
Oh, yes. Does this movie make you want to go to New Zealand?
Yes, but I really wanted to go to New Zealand beforehand, so I take that as you will.
I would say definitely, yeah. I always figured I really want to go to Australia. I've never been, and New Zealand was kind of an afterthought to me in sort of that area of the world, but this has definitely moved it up in terms of what I would want to visit.
It's a very different look than Lord of the Rings, which also makes me want to go to New Zealand. Also, I really want to go to Hobbiton.
Yes.
But it feels like a very different, it feels like a little less treacherous in this movie.
Yeah, there's probably not Uruk-hai who are going to come and like take you to Isengard, but
and we don't have to run so far over
less running
mountains and fields.
Yeah, for sure. I also really like that there are not the gigantic spiders in New Zealand, and I think that's why I want to do New Zealand and not Australia, because I don't do spiders.
Yeah.
I've been to Australia. I have family in Australia. Hello, family in Australia. So I've been there once. I spent a month there, and I didn't see a lot of scary things, but we did see a few scary things. And the most poisonous of everything seems to be from Australia.
Yeah, I'm gonna pass. I love you, Australians, but it would take a lot to get me there.
Does this movie make you want to sign up for a win an inn contest?
That was the other part that was just kind of ridiculous. Granted, I have been drunk and purchased things before. The whole premise behind that of having to like submit a, what was it, like 200 word essay, which
400
is
400 word essay that she wrote when she was drunk. They shouldn't have read the essay.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt weird.
This is the kind of thing where it kind of feels like they maybe came up with the title first and were like, okay,
yeah,
this is a good title. We got to figure out how to get her here.
Yes.
Well, and how do you get someone just like randomly go to a place they don't know anything about?
Right.
And the people have done this where they've had contests to win because then they make their money out of the entry fees.
Right.
So it's a real thing that happens.
Yeah, I think, wasn't there like an island in Greece that did it, like win an island, and then there was also like land in Ireland or something, win a castle.
I would like to do that.
All of the ideas for the business savvy woman that she is, there was not a lot of planning that was done in the trip. So this was probably the biggest issue I had, was like she gets on this bus to get off at the stop without knowing where it is or like doing any research on getting to the place that you need to get to.
Or like call and have connections in the community already.
Yeah. Like you talk to people. It's not that hard. There's the internet. Clearly, there's the internet.
To be fair, the beginning of this movie does give me the vibe of like her job. She loses her job and her relationship the course of like 24 hours or something. And I do get the impression that the ensuing weeks are just like a blur to her, where she's just like, great, sure, I'm going to New Zealand. I want an inn. I don't know. This is what we're doing now.
Yeah, that's true.
The ad was also really hilarious because it was... It kept saying New Zealand, and also was a voiceover, and it wasn't very like well produced.
Yes,
it was terrible, but it just kind of made me. I was going, was this meant to look this cheesy, or did they have no budget to hire someone to make them a nice, snazzy little ad? New Zealand. Anyways,
where is it?
It's in New Zealand.
Yeah, I really want our listeners to tell us how many times they say New Zealand in that very first promo thing, because I lost count and I stopped counting, but it was a lot.
It's a good drinking game rule if we ever do a tipsy commentary. Yes. So, and any final thoughts about this happy little getaway?
If you haven't watched it and you enjoy light romance comedies, this is a great, like, go and watch this movie, because you will be very happy at the end of it. Like, it just is very gentle, and we all need a little gentle in our lives, and it looks absolutely freaking gorgeous.
Yeah,
on many levels.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think this is necessarily a movie that I'm going to return to a lot the way some rom-coms are for me, but I do think it's definitely worth a watch for the sake of like the scenery and, as you're saying, just like the gentle, light, romantic aspect of it. I just think it is like a really relaxing watch. You don't have to be stressed during it, and you can just sit back and enjoy, and that's a really nice thing.
The Studio Ghibli of rom-coms.
Yeah, it doesn't ask a lot of us.
Yeah.
So it's like a great, like, you know, I could also see putting it on while I'm doing something else and you just want something pleasant. Right now, when I just can't deal with a lot of extra stress or weight, it just feels like kind of a nice thing to put on and watch. Yeah, this is our first vacation stop. We've now been to New Zealand.
Yes.
We're going to Australia next, so watch out for all of the scary things. There are some scary things in the movie that we're going to cover next. And if you are interested in following along with our itinerary, you can go look on our Twitter account, or I will post it on my Instagram account so you can go hashtag Agents of Smooch on Instagram and see our itinerary. And yeah, we'll be going to Australia next. After that, who knows? I know.
We know, I'm a
planner. You don't know. I'm a planner. I have a whole plan. So yes, go find our itinerary and tell us what you thought about this movie, or if you've been to New Zealand or not. Someday I'm going to go.
Someday.
There's lots of sheep and lots of knitting and yarn there too, yes. Which is also very intriguing.
All right, I'll call the Lyft for us to get to the airport.
Thank you for joining me, Quinn.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
I know. I can't wait. We got you on some more itinerary stops. We've got lots of different agents coming on this trip with us. And thank you for joining me, Kathy.
Thank you, Annette. It's always a pleasure.
So until next time, we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.